KBPS on PRP, student radio for the city of Portland. Joe Anderson here, your host. Thanks for tuning in. Join me as we hear from students across the Portland Public School District, powered by AM 1450 KBPS Portland. For 100 years, KBPS has been the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Brought to you by Portland Radio Project, KPRP LP Portland, your nonprofit community radio station. This is KBPS on PRP.
Good morning, KBPS on PRP. Today is Saturday, May 20th, and today is one of the most inspirational educational days of the year in Portland. That's because TED Talk is back in the Rose City. TEDx Portland celebrating year 11 today at the Keller Auditorium. It's a one-day event featuring 11 TED Talks highlighted by four incredible performances, including a culinary trailblazer and rising star featured in Netflix Street Food USA, an ocean advocate designing solutions for climate change and plastic pollution, a physician whose groundbreaking research revolutionized COVID-19 testing, a musical project celebrating queer love and Afro-Mexicano, a special forces group soldier advocating mental health and trauma awareness, a New York Times best-selling author and CEO coach changing the way we work together, a singer-songwriter whose soaring vocals made him a finalist on NBC's The Voice, a revolutionary leader who's shaping the future of Oregon's land use policies, an actress, author, and podcaster creating a platform for cult recovery advocacy, a local business leader and athlete empowering youth through education and sports, a principal designer for Amazon Alexa leading efforts with AI tools, one of the founding members of the Wu-Tang Clan and a hip-hop legend, a software engineer and tech enthusiast helping untangle technical complexity, and a genre-bending musician with a passion for bringing new life to vintage pianos. You can find more information about all the TED Talks happening today at the Keller Auditorium online on the website tedxportland.com. Now, KBPS has a unique connection to TEDx Portland and TED Talks here in Portland. A parent of one of our current broadcasting students has given a TED Talk in Portland before at a previous TEDx Portland conference. We wanted to share that TED Talk with you. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. My name is James, and I'm a user experience designer, which means for the last 15 or so years, in order to build the next generation of digital products, I've had to sit at that intersection of emerging technology and human behavior. And as I've done this kind of work, something has recently come top of mind for me. And that's what I'm here to talk to you today about. I'm actually here with a call to action. I want every single one of you to become a better connoisseur of technology in your own life. Now, I know some people bristle at the word connoisseur. It's got this highbrow connotation. I'm not here to tell you to be eye snobs. In fact, quite the opposite. I'm here because I believe it's a moral imperative. But we'll get to that in a second. First, I want to define what it means to be a connoisseur. So, to become a connoisseur is to become an expert judge in matters of taste, right? And this makes sense to us. We think of connoisseurs of art, maybe music, maybe food, right? And we live in the best town for this, right? We have our cult of craft beer. We have our read your own damn book clubs. We even have a Kickstarter-backed cheese club, which is phenomenal. This is a great town for it, right? And recently, I feel like I've stumbled upon a den of connoisseurs here in Portland. For those of you who haven't been here, this is the Multnomah Whiskey Library. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's like stepping back into another time. And when you look along the walls, you see these amazing gilded shelves. And atop these gilded shelves are thousands upon thousands of bottles of whiskey, quite literally. And there was nothing like going into the library for me to realize that I am not, in fact, a connoisseur of whiskey. I was a little bit clueless, but I am a student of human behavior. So I was able to observe these connoisseurs in their native habitat. And they were able to make these great decisions, right? Like, I like bourbon over scotch, or I prefer peat flavors over smoke, right? Whatever was important to them, the values that made choices easy for them. And I think this is the crux of being a connoisseur. It's being able to make smart, informed choices based on your own values. Now, this wall of choice reminded me of another wall that I had seen. This is Apple's app wall at their Worldwide Developers Conference. And every single of those tiny little squares represents an app on the App Store. Choices available to us in technology. Now, I don't know how much you guys spend thinking about this, but as a designer, I'm acutely aware of this. Because, in fact, my job is the applied science of making this complexity clear. It's about dipping into that sea of data that's available to us and making meaning. And as designers, we actually do this by trying to understand the people we're designing for, what matters to them. And that's how you sort of elevate something beyond just utility to create a spark of human emotion to make something more meaningful, more valuable, right? It's my job. I absolutely love it. But let me give you a really concrete example of this. So weather apps. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of weather apps on the App Store, and they have a pretty standard data set, right? You've got high and low temperature, precipitation, all that standard stuff, right? And on the left here, we've got something called dark skies. Now, dark skies takes where you are in that moment, the forecast, and it gives you really actionable data. Says it's going to start to drizzle in 35 minutes. And if you're a biker in Portland, this is a very handy thing to have, right? On the other hand, we have Yahoo's weather app. And they take the same data, right? They say, where are you? What's the forecast? And they find a picture on the internet that combines those two things to evoke an emotion about weather. Both amazing experiences, very well designed, but appeal to very different types of people. So let's talk about another choice in technology. For the like four of you in the audience who have not played this game, it's called Candy Crush Saga. And it's amazing. They have something like 150 million monthly active users. It's one of the most downloaded and played games the last 6 months or so. And it's essentially a puzzle game. And anyone who has played this can tell you that if you get hooked, if you play long enough to get hooked, you cannot put the darn game down. Now, this has a really interesting side effect, because if you look at the reviews in the App Store, you see people talking about the fact that it's mind-numbing and addictive. Think about those words for a second. Now, because we're talking about choice, I'll show you my local favorite. This is built here in Portland by a guy named Nevin Morgan. It's called Black Bar. And it, too, is a puzzle game, but it uses words. And if you look at the App Store reviews, you see people talking about it being thought-provoking and witty. Now, this is about choice. I believe Candy Crush is really well-named. It's digital junk food. But I like a bag of Doritos, too, right? If you actually need an escape, Candy Crush can be amazing. But what I do want to emphasize is if your technology choices are actually making you feel bad about yourself, perhaps you should reconsider, right? And I'm here to tell you this because technology is changing our behaviors. Technology is a part of our culture. A decade ago, you would not have seen people in a bar taking a picture of a cocktail to post on Instagram. By the way, I heard a rumor that we totally took down Instagram earlier this morning. But this is interesting, right? Because people are using technology in new and interesting ways, and it's changing our world in the barroom, in the boardroom, in the bedroom, and yes, admit it, even in your bathroom, right? Technology is coming into our lives in new and interesting ways. And I believe that we need to be more thoughtful about our choices as this happens. And I think this is important, actually, because of our kids. It kind of reminds me of the last talk, actually. Our kids, they're so important to us, right? And I want you to think about the last time that you handed a child in your life some kind of technology. Now, I don't care what your relationship to that particular child was, and I don't care if it was a smartphone or an Xbox controller. But what were you thinking about in that moment that you handed this to them? Were you thinking about the fact you needed 5 more minutes to get the dishes done or finish a conversation with your spouse? Were you thinking about the impact that this technology might have on this kid's life, good, bad, or otherwise? These are the questions that actually do kind of keep me up at night, because this is not any kid. This is my 8-year-old son, Travis. We have jokingly for quite some time called him the Kidbot, because he perhaps does not have a normal mom when it comes to technology because of what I do. This just happened to be the number of devices sitting in my house on an average Saturday morning. But because we have so much technology, I worry a lot how this technology is going to impact his life. And the more I talk to other parents and educators, I know that I'm not the only one who has these concerns. And the reason that we worry is because sometimes scary things happen. Let me give you a really great example that happened in my house. So, my kid, he's 8 years old, he loves cartoons. And one of his favorites is this great cartoon called Dexter's Laboratory. And it's about a kid scientist, right? Totally awesome cartoon. Now, my son couldn't remember if we had been watching this on Netflix or on iTunes. So he pops open iTunes, and he types in D-E-X. And what do you think happens? Yeah. Showtime's favorite serial killer, Dexter, comes up. Now, the social scientist in me thought, ooh, that's really interesting. But the mother part of me was mortified. I was horrified that my kid was looking at Dexter. And this is what happens if we're not thinking critically about the technologies that we're handing to our kids or we don't understand them. Perhaps we're sending our children down a dark hallway alone where Dexter is waiting just around the corner. Now, I believe this is happening because we view our children as digital natives. This is actually what the media calls them. But a cultural anthropologist who studies a lot in this, Dana Boyd, she actually calls them digital naives. You sort of drop that T out. And this is because while the technology seems natural in the hands of our kids, oftentimes we're ceding parental responsibility to them before they're mature enough because they're viewed as being ready to just sort of take this on. And by the way, this has happened forever. For my generation, we were responsible for programming the VCRs of the world. You too, right? But the stakes were lower then, right? The problem we have is if we're doing this today, if we're waiting for our kids to tell us about the funny new video on YouTube or the great new app, if it's Snapchat or WhatsApp, I think there's a risk inherent in this. And I think this is all evidence that we are a generation who is becoming increasingly digitally illiterate at the exact same time that we're trying to raise our kids to be good digital citizens. And this is important in almost every aspect of their life, from school to work to home and social life. Now, I think this is really important, and I've heard it said that talking to our kids about digital citizenry is essentially the new version of the birds and the bees talk. It makes us really, really uncomfortable, but it's necessary because in this age of data permanence, mistakes that our kids make, if they make them online, will be worn on their digital identity like a tattoo. And we cannot afford to walk into these conversations with our children ill-prepared. Now, this reminds me of a quote from one of my favorite authors, Douglas Adams, and he came up with a set of rules about our reactions to technologies. And he said, any technology introduced into the world after you're the age of 35 is against the natural order of things. And I thought this was funny until the very moment I put on Google Glass. Yes, this was this moment. And I was not a connoisseur in this moment. I was not thinking critically. I had this visceral, negative reaction. And the problem with this is if we want to be good role models to our kids, we need to model the behaviors and the attitudes that we want to see in them. We want them to be curious. We want them to be joyful. We don't want them to make this face. So I'm here to tell you that I actually think there's a simple solution to this. And I like to call it James Keller's three-step model for becoming a better digital connoisseur in your own life. Step one, very simply, is to question. Find a question. Step two is to play. I love that that was a theme of one of the last talks. You need to experiment, you need to explore. And step three is to learn. And by the way, if you use this model well, on that step three, when you learn, it's actually going to provoke more and interesting questions, and this should be a virtuous circle. So let's break this down for everybody. So step one, to question. Now, for me, the question was, Google Glass, does it matter? And that might not be the question for everybody. The question for you might actually be, what weather app is right for me? Or even, which is my favorite of the top 10 videos on YouTube right now? All of those very good questions. Step two is to play, to explore, to experiment, to roll up your sleeves, invest the time, and do whatever's necessary to figure this out. Which means that you too can discover why True Facts about the octopus is one of the funniest things on YouTube right now. I love it. And then step three is to learn. It's to think critically. It's to say if and how and why these technologies matter to our world, if and how and why they align to your values, and if and how and why you want to integrate these technologies into your own life. And by the way, the best way to learn is to teach. And this is the moment that we bring our children back into that conversation, because we can tell them about what we've found, what we've experienced, and what's important to us, so that we can ask them what they see, what they've found, and what's important to them. Because, by the way, our kids are going to be building the technology platforms of our future. And we want to equip them to be able to think critically, because their creations are going to impact the world that we live in. Thank you.
Again, we've been listening to a former TED Talk presented at the TEDx Portland Conference from a parent of one of our current KBPS students. This year's TEDx Portland Conference is happening today at the Keller Auditorium.
You're listening to KBPS on Portland Radio Project.
Hello, everyone. I hope you're all doing well today. My name is James, and today I'm going to be talking about a very specific genre of music that holds a very near and dear place to my heart. This genre is called bossa nova and is predominantly found in Brazil. One of the very first songs I'd like to share with you from this genre of music is called The Girl from Ipanema, which is by João Gilberto and Stan Getz, who are largely considered to be some of the forefathers of this legendary genre of music. So without further ado, let's get into it. Coming up next is The Girl from Ipanema.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça, ela menina que vem, que passa, num doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema, o seu balançado é mais que um poema, é a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Ah, por que estou tão sozinho? Ah, por que tudo é tão triste? Ah, existe. A beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha. Ah, se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo sorrindo se enche de graça e fica mais lindo por causa do amor.
Again, that was The Girl from Ipanema by João Gilberto and Stan Getz. Now, that language that you just heard was actually Portuguese, which is the predominant language used in Brazil. Now, that song in particular was not actually created by either of the two, but was instead a cover of the former work made already by two previous bossa nova artists, although João Gilberto and Stan Getz have made probably the most notable version of this piece. The genre of bossa nova is considered to be almost a remix in some sense of the classic American jazz that we know. And it was made around 1950. Now, the next song that I want to share with you today is called Desafinado, and it is also by Stan Getz and João Gilberto.
Se você disser que eu desafino, amor, saiba que isto em mim provoca imensa dor. Só privilegiados têm ouvido igual ao seu. Eu possuo apenas o que Deus me deu. Se você insiste em classificar meu comportamento diante musical, eu mesmo mentindo devo argumentar que isto é bossa nova, que isto é muito natural. O que você não sabe, nem sequer presente, é que os desafinados também têm coração. Fotografei você na minha Rolleiflex, revelou-se a sua enorme ingratidão. Só não poderá falar assim do meu amor. Ele é o maior que você pode encontrar, viu? Você com a sua música esqueceu o principal. Que no peito dos desafinados, no fundo do peito bate calado. No peito dos desafinados também bate um coração.
Now, the final song that I have for you today is just by João Gilberto, as opposed to being by the duo of Getz and Gilberto. Now, to clarify a couple things, Stan Getz is not originally from Brazil. He is from Philadelphia in the United States. Additionally, he is not the singer of this duo group. That would be João Gilberto. He plays the tenor saxophone and is considered to be one of, if not the greatest tenor saxophonists in the entire world. Now, João Gilberto is not only the guitarist for this group, but he's also the main singer of this little duo. And separately, João Gilberto had a very successful career just by himself playing his own music. Now, the next song I want to share with you, as I previously mentioned, is only by João Gilberto, and this song is called Chega de Saudade.
Vai, minha tristeza e diz a ela que sem ela não pode ser. Diz-lhe numa prece que ela regresse, porque eu não posso mais sofrer. Chega de saudade, a realidade é que sem ela não há paz, não há beleza, é só tristeza e a melancolia que não sai de mim, não sai de mim, não sai. Mas se ela voltar, se ela voltar, que coisa linda, que coisa louca, pois há menos peixinhos a nadar no mar do que os beijinhos que eu darei na sua boca. Dentro dos meus braços, os abraços hão de ser milhões de abraços, apertado assim, colado assim, calado assim, abraços e beijinhos e carinhos sem ter fim. Que é pra acabar com esse negócio de viver longe de mim. Vai, minha tristeza, e diz a ela que sem ela não pode ser. Diz-lhe numa prece que ela regresse, porque eu não posso mais sofrer. Chega de saudade, a realidade é que sem ela não há paz, não há beleza, é só tristeza e a melancolia que não sai de mim, não sai de mim, não sai. Mas se ela voltar, que coisa linda, que coisa louca, pois há menos peixinhos a nadar no mar do que os beijinhos que eu darei na sua boca. Dentro dos meus braços, os abraços hão de ser milhões de abraços, apertado assim, colado assim, calado assim, abraços e beijinhos, carinhos sem ter fim. Que é pra acabar com esse negócio de viver longe de mim. Não quero mais esse negócio de você viver assim. Vamos deixar desse negócio de você viver sem mim.
Well, that was all for me for today. I really hope that you enjoyed some of the songs that I shared with you today, and maybe you haven't heard a couple of them, and maybe this implored you to go listen to more bossa nova out there, as it's a fantastic genre with so much music to be discovered. I have a couple personal favorites that unfortunately couldn't make it today, but hopefully in the near future we'll get to hear a couple of them, as this is a genre that has a very near and dear place in my heart, and I really hope to share it again sometime soon. Now I hope you all have a fantastic day and you go out there and listen to some music you haven't ever heard before. Breach your comfort zone, listen to new music, and try everything. Have a wonderful day, everyone. This has been James with KBPS.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
You're listening to Portland Radio Project on 99.1 FM. Our mission is to elevate local artists and organizations through streaming, broadcasting, and podcasting, engaging new generations of arts lovers and community supporters. This segment brought to you by the student staff of AM 1450 KBPS. The Oregon Community Foundation Board of Directors has elected Lane Shetterly as the foundation's next board chair and added three additional prominent leaders from across the state to the board. These new board leaders bring extensive experience in communications, economic development, legal, public policy, technology, and workforce expertise to their roles. Board Chair Lane Shetterly is currently of counsel with the law firm Sherman, Sherman, Johnny, and Hoyt in Dallas, Oregon. He served as an Oregon Senate representative from 1997 to 2004. From 2004 through August of 2007, he was the director of the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development. The Community Foundation Board is also bringing forward several prominent female leaders and entrepreneurs in its leadership. With decades of experience working in economic and workforce development and transportation issues, Kati McKeown will represent the South Coast region of Oregon on OCF's board. She's currently engaged in community relations work on behalf of North Point Development, where she is principally involved with the development to establish a new container port for the Port of Coos Bay. McKeown served as a member of the House of Representatives, representing Oregon's 9th District from 2013 to 2021. Julie Jones Manning, a retired veteran communications leader with expertise in communications, marketing, public relations, and resource development, represents the Southern Willamette Valley region as a new board member. Ms. Manning previously served as Vice President for Marketing, Communications, and Community Health Promotion at Samaritan Health Services, a Corvallis-based regional health system comprising hospitals, medical clinics, and health plans serving Lynn, Brenton, and Lincoln counties. She retired from Samaritan in 2022 after 37 years with the organization. New Portland-based board member Monica Anand founded Zaproved, Inc., a cloud-based software provider for corporate legal departments in 2008, and served as its chief executive officer until the sale of the company in January of 2023. She brings celebrated business leadership and entrepreneurial experience with focused expertise around innovation and technology. She received the 2021 Executive of the Year Award from the Technology Association of Oregon and the 2018 Sam Blackman Award for Civic Engagement and the 2016 Portland Business Journal Entrepreneur of the Year Award.
Hey there, everyone. I'm Joseph Freeman, part of the KPS student staff. I'm going to tell you one of my own personal stories. You see, last week, I went on a trip to New Mexico to learn about different colleges and universities down there, while also learning some cultural stuff about the Native American people. And man, it was a lot of fun. First day, we went to an event called Meow Wolf. It's a glorious, glorious attraction made by several different artists who felt like they couldn't really make the art that everyone wanted, and instead made what they wanted. It was an amazing, amazing attraction. Apparently, they have three. I haven't fully looked up the rest of the locations. But if you're ever in New Mexico, I suggest you go visit it because it was absolutely gorgeous. And of course, the next day, we visited a college called IAIA, which is amazing, like intermediate type of art college, because what it would do is teach you about different forms of art and what they do. It's an amazing, amazing college that I would recommend if you're really into the arts. That's basically sum up the entire trip. It was a lot of fun. A lot of cultural things learned, and if you ever go down to Mexico, I say you start visiting around. I'm Joseph Spirano with the student staff, signing off.
Hello, this is Ariana from KBPS on PRP. I'm here with
Oscar B.
and Oscar C.
And today we're going to be talking about prom. What is your guys' opinion about prom?
I'm excited for it. It's this upcoming weekend. Everyone's, you know, getting their suits, or the girls getting their dresses, you know. Everyone's getting their shoes, getting their haircuts and stuff. Everyone's ready to go. Everyone's going to be looking nice, looking snazzy for everyone else. Oscar, your thoughts?
I feel like it's going to be a good experience, especially tickets are still on sale. I think this is the last week they're going to start letting people in and buy tickets, but make sure you guys turn in that form, and after that, come get your tickets. But I just want to see everyone there, and I want to see other people's outfits, you know, the guys, you know, see the fit, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So what about you, Ariana?
I'm really excited just to be hanging out with my friends and seeing everyone enjoy themselves. And, you know, technically we only have 3 more weeks of school, so it's going to be a really good distraction for us, because like in 3 weeks or 2 weeks we're going to have finals. But yeah, and I'm happy that it's going to be sunny. It's going to be really, really hot. So any other thoughts?
No, I'm good. You, Oscar?
No, I'm just excited to go. You know, everyone's going to be looking nice. All the boys and girls probably going to be taking pictures. But yeah, thank you for having me.
This has been Ariana,
Oscar B,
and Oscar C
on KBPS on PRP.
We wouldn't have banking today if it weren't for the Crusades. I am Josiah on KBPS Portland for the PRP Hour, and let me tell you all about it. So to start off, we have to actually go back to the beginning. When the Crusades started up, they really took down all of Jerusalem. People going from where? It was like Italy. They went from Italy through the Holy Roman Empire, or not Holy Roman Empire, but through the through Rome, through the Byzantine Empire, and then made it into Arab lands. And the goal was to take the Holy Land back from the Arabs. So they went on a crusade to take back Jerusalem. And after succeeding, tons and tons of people would obviously want to move to this new land, which had just been conquered. So in order to make sure that nobody got robbed while they were moving there, the Templars had made a new system. They, first of all, would every single Templar was a every single one was their own accountant. So a lot of Templars were really, really, really book smart when it came to finances, and so they could organize your money pretty well. Another thing, you could actually have a Templar deposit your finances into a sort of Templar bank or a Templar holding, and then they would escort you. One of the Templars would escort you with a piece of paper, which was like an IOU, bringing you to Jerusalem, and then you could go to whatever place held money at Jerusalem, deposit the IOU, and then get your money back when you got there. So it was its own way of like, you basically put on a piece of paper how much money you had before, and then you go to Jerusalem, and you get that money out. And this made the first ever kind of bank, but then the first ever real international bank was also the Templars. And it was the Bank of the Bank of Paris, and or it was called the Paris Temple, which is amazing, great name. And then they made another one in London called the London Temple, and a lot of kings would go to these temples and they would ask the Templars for money whenever they were going on like a some kind of mission or like a crusade. Basically, whenever they needed finances, they would go to one of these places and they would either get pounds from the bank, like if you were in London, or you would get livres from the currency that was in France at the time. And so it was the first ever actual like kind of banking. And so they would set up a bunch of these tiny little offices that the international banks could connect to and send that money to. So that way you could go to one of these banks, say, I need this money, and then they would send a message back to the temple and say, hey, we need this person's money. Can you please send it to us? And obviously, there were a couple of flaws, but for the most part, it worked pretty well. Another reason why this bank was made was because of the fact that, like, Templars, it was a lot of money to get Templars. There was a battle, I can't remember what it was called, but there was a battle where there had been 300 Templars deployed and only 33 survived the battle. And then there was also the Battle of Harim, which had about, 150 Templars, and then only like 15 lived. The cost that France was spending on just getting Templars was incredible. Like, we're talking $250,000 of the French annual income, which today is more of I don't even know. It's a lot of money. It's like billions of dollars today. But back then, it was also a lot of money. So the France was spending about 250,000 livres a year in order to keep the Templars going and like actually have expeditions and have their own military battles. So it was really, really expensive. And so the banking system allowed them to not sell like all of their land, because this is another thing. You had to pay at first to get Templars. So people would just hand over whatever they had. Some people, there was one man actually who ended up, he wanted a problem dealt with so quickly that he donated everything he owned. He donated all of his land, all of his houses, all of the tenants in those houses, which is interesting, and just everything he had basically to the Templars because banking wasn't a thing yet. And so although earlier you could donate like one little bit of your land to the Templars, in later like 1266, people had to donate everything. It cost five times as much than during the 1100s. And that was why the banking was important, because that's why the banks were made, was to stop people from having to sell everything they had so that way they could get protection of any sort. So today, that is still in effect. The like Templar, the ideas of a bank that connects to more banks and an international bank is still around today. And we can thank the Templars for that because, oh, we wouldn't have one. But the whole reason that it even happened in the first place was because of Jerusalem. Although the first ever kind of like paper money to be used in banks, it was in England. Although the first kind of paper money was in China. But still, very interesting. I enjoyed researching this, and I hope that you all have a great afternoon. I have been Josiah on the KBPS Hour for PRP. Thank you for listening.
Hello, this is KBPS PRP. My name is Travis, and hello. One of the things I want to talk about is, well, school's great and everything, and I love Benson being here as a community member. But one of the things that always caught my eye was work and school. I believe that most teachers don't know that us students can be very busy when working. Like for me, I go to Trackers Earth, which is a daycare for, I think it is first grade to like 11th and 10th. Like it is just like survival daycare, teaching them how to make fires, building shelters, how to fish, or fun activities like doing paintball, which is one of my favorites. I feel like the problem with some teachers don't realize is the work that we do as a society for other things, like just doing work in general. Some parents are stressing out, like the money, rents, making sure their bills are paid so they have a roof over their head. I've also realized that causes a lot of stress because we as a community like to make sure that we have money to spend. Like I understand is like that saying of, oh, like, hey, mom, I want to get some McDonald's. Do you have McDonald's money? We do that work so we can spend at our own rate. But also, then again, it is annoying to understand that, like, yes, homework is important. So it's a good way to track your grade and understand what are their, like, highs and lows between their grades. But understanding that people understanding like the way how homework works is like I understand it's important, but then again, some of us, it's not just homework, it's the way we are having a roof over our heads. And like for me, I'm not in that situation, but I'm talking to the other people who are having that situation, which is dire. Like I've always wondered, like, for some people who are in that crisis, if how stressful it is to have your parents have to owe like 75% of your paycheck just to make sure that all you guys can live under a roof. So I feel like teachers should have more of recognition of, hey, our student is being very busy making sure that we are like making sure that we we have kids that are being safe when they come home, not frequently changing homes because their landlord or whatever other reason is they cannot pay their rent. Like, it is just an awful thing I have to speak up about, but this is one of the things that, like, I understand. Because as me, I work a 8-hour shift. It is very stressful. We make sure that we make sure we get ourselves paid. We make sure we can do all the things we want to do. Like, you know, we can pay for fast food, or if you want to pay for groceries, like if you want to have maybe chicken thighs or drumsticks or mashed potatoes. Like, I like the microwave ones. Don't judge me on that. But honestly, it hurts to see kids stressing out because of the little things like, hey, I've got work and I try to make sure that I can get paid. So maybe in the future when I save up that money, I can pay off other things. And so then I feel like I'm more of a free man with a roof under our heads. So yeah, that's all I wanted to talk about for this PRP, because it is stressful, more stressful than enough to think about what is it like to be stressed out with work plus school, which both are very important. And I feel like right now employment is really rough, and like people are trying to get subs, more employees, because some employees are getting more sick because of, well, allergy season. So it is a rough time, and I just wish people for the best of times where people can have these opportunities to learn what it is like to have responsibility and also understand what is life. And like, I understand, like, school, you can make a great resume for high school. This is why you don't really drop out, is just because you can always build on your resume. Your grades will show how much responsibility you have. Your hobbies will show you what type of person, like, are you passionate? Are you good working? Are you good working with others? So, yeah. But, yeah, this is going to be the PRP. This is Travis signing out.
Hello, this is Colby, the KBPS radio team, and today I'm here with...
Coy.
And, shocking, we're talking about cars again.
Don't even get me started.
Well, I mean, I kind of want to, since this is our PRP. So, Coy, tell me, why do you hate Ford so much?
I've had bad experiences with them.
Like what?
I mean, we've had a Ford before, like me and my cousin, you know, because we always be buying cars together and working on them together and doing stuff with cars that are kind of stupid. And the only car we ever had an issue with was a Ford. We had a 1994 or 95. I don't remember. It was like a Mustang, though. That thing was hot garbage, let me tell you. And we bought it, like, working completely fine. And my cousin's plan was to daily it. And then right as we got it, it just started having a ton of issues. Like, it's not like it had issues as in, like, you know, we got scammed. Well, I mean, I guess we kind of did. The transmission had an issue, and we didn't really notice it. But other than that, though, like, the engine was running completely fine. And within having that for, like, 4 months, it just, like, started to get so bad. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think it's a reliable car.
That's actually a little shocking, because my dad, he has a Ford. And, like, that literally has bullet holes in the engine. And it still runs fine.
That's insane. Like, I don't know. Maybe we did get scammed.
Somebody literally shot his engine. And, like, it's fine. It works.
That's crazy. That's like a Honda moment.
Yeah. No, his Ford has been through, like, everything it can possibly go to. Like, my dad bought a different truck, like, different truck brand. I don't remember the name, but, like, yeah, it sucked. Like, it was like...
Was it a Ram?
I don't remember.
Or a Chevy?
I can't remember. It might have been a Chevy, but, like...
Don't diss Chevy. Chevy's in the past. We all know that.
The first day he got it, it, like, started raining. He noticed, oh, hey, it's a little wet in my truck.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Chevy seals are terrible.
Yeah, yeah. The seal was bad, and then he was gonna go get it fixed, but like, he didn't have time. And then when he finally did, like a rat got in and like ate everything.
Oh, bro.
Yeah.
So they had a seal messed up on the. We had a like a farm truck. It was a Chevy Silverado, and when the seals were gone, we didn't know that. So we took it to a car wash, like, you know, you wash it yourself. We sprayed it in like where that was, and we're just like. Into the thing, we're like, oh, bruh.
Yeah,
you got pranked.
My stepbrother, he's a Ford Ranger, loves that truck.
Oh, and Ford Rangers are dope. It's the only Ford elf.
But he it kind of got flooded because he's not sure how, but one of the seals he thinks broke.
Probably.
Yeah, so it kind of flooded. And it's fine now, but like, yeah. Like that's my biggest fear with like cars, especially living here in Oregon, is a seal's going to break and I'm not aware of it.
I mean, you'll notice.
No, there's actually one time when I first moved back to Oregon, I was living in Wilsonville, uh-huh. and I went to the Target by Wilson in Wilsonville, and I saw this convertible, roof down, like shag, like carpet covering the seats.
Mm-hmm.
It was pouring.
Oh, bruh.
And I was just saying that, like, this guy is not going to have a good time when he gets back to his car.
Exactly.
And, like, sits down in it. Because, like, when it comes to
a convertible,
like, yeah, when it comes to convertibles, like, I understand that, I understand wanting them, but if you're gonna leave it, one, just put it up in the first place, because like
someone
it's
can
Portland
steal it.
Yeah, it's Portland, like,
well, you were in Wilsonville, maybe it's not that bad over there.
I think convertibles are cool. I personally wouldn't own one just because, like, again, knowing me.
If I live in, like, California, then hell yeah.
Yeah, but like, knowing me, I'd forget to like put it up, and it would. Like, someone would rob, but also, like, the two things I hate having in cars, like, I will never buy a convertible, but also I hate when cars have sunroofs. I don't like sunroofs. They're cool to have, but, like, they really, like, when there's, like, light coming from somewhere I can't see where it's coming from, it really bugs with me, and that kind of ends up distracting me.
Close it.
Yeah, but like, then it's like, why would I buy a car with a sunroof when I could just not have a sunroof in a car?
I like cars with moonroofs. Sunroofs look cool. I mean, you do have a point, though. They are kind of pointless.
Yeah.
With, I mean, they are and they're not. I don't know. I like moonroofs more because you can just open the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, sunroofs, like, they can, like, I guess, like, provide, like some sort of airflow, whatever.
Some kind
like,
of moonroof. I don't know. Yeah. I think a moonroof's a bit better. But like, in photo-wise, if you pop your sunroof, you know, your car kind of looks based.
Yeah.
But I guess it's the only thing that's kind of cool about those. No one really cares about that, so.
Yeah, it's like, I was actually going to get a Tesla for my first car, which I'm glad I didn't because I don't, like... Teslas are really cool technically, but like, okay, I get it. You don't like Teslas.
You're but, like rich, bro. Like, where's my Tesla?
We're actually very poor, but.
Yeah, that's probably why, because you're going to buy a Tesla.
No, we don't. We didn't. But I ended up buying like a Subaru. But like, I was looking at Tesla because I was an Uber driver picked me up to take me somewhere. And like, the Tesla's really cool. Like, it tells you like all these really interesting, like, useful things.
They're nice cars. I just wanted to own
well,
one.
Well, also, like, the roof is like all glass. It's like tinted, and that's cool. But at the same time, like, I feel like that get really annoying. And also, my biggest fear is that it's going to crack, and then I'm going to have like a huge crack all along the roof.
Yeah. Like, one thing also with Teslas, at least, like, I mean, I know this is kind of like not a part of what we're talking about, but have you ever seen the Teslas with white seats? That'd be so terrifying.
No.
Yeah, they're like bright white.
No,
so, you know,
God, no.
The literal dirt patch.
Yeah, that's my thing with like anything white in cars is it's going to suck because you are going to have it detailed like every week type of thing.
Bleached.
Yeah, like I have dogs, and like when I like my dogs, I want them to ride with me. No, they cannot ride. In a car with like anything white in it, especially seats, because I know immediately it's gonna be covered with paw prints.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a bra moment. I've had cars with tan seats in them. That sucks because I don't know what it is. Tan just looks so gross. It makes it look like your seats are dirty, especially since the two tan cars I've had. Boy, with tan interiors, were both smoked in, so it just smelled really bad and looked like garbage. I don't know. It wasn't a fun time.
Yeah, but anyway, we should probably wrap this up because we're getting into 10 minutes. This has been Colby with the KBPS Radio Center with
Coy.
Everyone have a good day.
KBPS on PRP, the new student show airing on Portland Radio Project, featuring Benson High School KBPS radio students. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School, staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry. Streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial. KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland. On the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joe Anderson, and this has been an hour with KBPS on PRP.